No Pain, No Gain, 50 Shades of Grey by Anthony Lane, from the February 23, 2015 issue of The New Yorker. If the figures are correct, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James has been bought by more than 100 million people, of whom only 20 million were under the impression that it was a paint catalog. That leaves a solid 80 million or so who, upon reading sentences such as, "He strokes his chin thoughtfully with his long, skilled fingers," had to lie down for a while and let the creamy waves of ecstasy subside. Now, after an enticing build-up, which took to extreme lengths the art of the peekaboo, the film of the book is here. Nothing has exercised the novel's devotees, the Jamesians, as we must think of them, quite as much as the proper occupants of the central roles. Who could conceivably play Christian Grey, the awkward young billionaire with the extensive neckwear collection, let alone Anastasia Steele, the English lit major who is also, as we guessed to learn, one of the leading virgins of Vancouver, Washington? Many combinations were suggested, my own preference being Nick Nolte and Barbara Streisand, who made such a lovely couple in The Prince of Tides. But in the end, the lucky winners were Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson. Good choices, I reckon, especially Johnson, who, as the granddaughter of Tippi Hedren, knows everything about predators who stare and swoop. Anna, as she is usually called, first meets Christian Grey at Grey House, which is home to Grey Enterprises in Seattle. Don't you adore rich men who hide themselves away? She is there in lieu of her roommate, who is meant to interview Grey for the college newspaper but has fallen sick. Anna, ushered into his presence, stumbles first over the threshold and then over her words, but begins to melt as he expounds on his bountiful gifts. "I've always been good at people," he says, as though people were Scrabble or Squash. He's interested in what motivates them, what incentivizes them. Any woman should run a mile from a man who uses the verb incentivize. But things could have been worse, I guess. He could have said monetize. He also lends her a pencil bearing the word gray, the tip of which she rubs against her lip. Either she has a cold sore, or these folks are getting ready to rumble. Their next encounter comes at a hardware store, where Christian is stocking up on masking tape, cable ties, and rope. "You're the complete serial killer," Anna says. "Now there's a thought." We know Anna reads Jane Austen, and here, for a second, she sounds like the heroine of Northanger Abbey, who's mocked for always assuming the worst, or at any rate, the most gothically arousing. Also, Dornan is no stranger to wickedness. In The Fall, a BBC drama that shows on Netflix, he is a serial killer, armed with a rasping beard, his native Belfast accent, and roughly 10 times the sexual allure that he projects in 50 Shades. Could Anna's fears be well-founded? Is Christian a Terminator? No. He's many things, a pianist, a pilot, a pervert, and a tremendous bore, but evil is not in his wardrobe. Anna asked casually if he is a do-it-yourselfer. That would explain a lot. Christian, it transpires, has a private passion, the cause of what James calls his odd, "I've got a whopping big secret" smile. Down a corridor of his apartment, behind a locked door, lurks the Red Room. Lavishly stuffed with the tools of domestic torture, it is supposed to radiate a breathless lust, although the result looks more like a spread from House Beautiful. Here, within these crimson walls, our hero is free to express himself as a dominant, meaning not that he's the fifth tone of the diatonic scale, which would be really hot, but rather that he constrains and chastises women who wish to be treated thus. At least, that's what he's telling himself. Mostly he sounds like your basic stalker. "I'm incapable of leaving you alone," he informs Anna, a notion that appears to stimulate her, although it would easily warrant a call to 911. She succumbs up to a point, but her recurring doubts lead Christian to dish up one of those crusty old no-means-yes propositions which feminism has battled for decades. "You want to leave? Your body tells me something different." "Pass the butt plug." So, how does the movie directed by Sam Taylor Johnson stack up against the book? And what's in it for non-Jamesians? Well, we lose Anna's introduction to fellatio, set precariously in a bathtub. In a similar vein, we skip the breakfast that she shares with Christian at an international house of pancakes. Above all, we're denied James's personifications, which are much livelier than her characters. "My sleepy subconscious has the final swipe at me." "Yes, my inner goddess is thrilled!" No, my psyche screams. Couldn't someone have gotten Sarah Silverman to play the psyche? On the other hand, the film, by dint of its simple competence, being largely well-acted, not too long, and somberly photographed by Seamus McGarvey, has to be better than the novel. It could hardly be worse. No new reader, however charitable, could open 50 Shades of Grey, browse a few paragraphs, and reasonably conclude that the author was writing in her first language, or even her fourth. There are poignant moments when the plainest of physical actions is left dangling beyond reach of her prose. I slice another piece of venison, holding it against my mouth. The global appeal of the novel has led some fans to hollow it as a classic, but with all due respect, it's not to be confused with Madame Bovary. Rather, 50 Shades of Grey is the kind of book that Madame Bovary would read. Yet we should not begrudge E.L. James her triumph, for she has, in her lumbering fashion, tapped into a truth that often eludes more elegant writers. That eternal disappointment, deep in the human heart, at the failure of our loved ones to acquire their own helipad. Much of the novel's fixation with style, or with the barrage of stuff that a sense of style can buy, is carried onto the screen. Where the money shots should be, we get shots of what money can provide. The subtle silk ties that adorn the paperback covers, and which somehow made it okay by a dazzling sleight of a publisher's hand to read soft pornography in public, are arrayed in the opening scene. Anna can barely move for Audie's. Christian wows her with rides, first in his thunderous chopper and then in his smooth white glider, presumably praying that she won't have seen Pierce Brosnan do the same in the Thomas Crown Affair. The only viewer, in fact, who may feel shortchanged by 50 Shades of Grey is Liam Hellner, who's listed in the credits as BDSM Technical Consultant. Check out the Red Room, rack upon rack of cutting-edge bullwhips, a variety of high-end ass paddles, and more restraining cuffs than you can shake a stick at. And how much of this kit gets used? A mere fraction. And even then, Christian, supposedly the Meister of Pain, can do little more than brush his cat-o'-nine tails over Anna's flesh with a feathery backhand. He looks like Roger Federer practicing gentle cross-court lobs at the net. And there you have the problem with this film. It is gray with good taste, shade upon shade of muted naughtiness, daubed within the limits of the R rating. Think of it as the Downtown Abbey of Bondage, designed neither to menace nor to offend, but purely to cosset the fatigued imagination. You get dirtier talk in most action movies, and more genitalia in a TED talk on Renaissance sculpture. True, Dakota Johnson does her best, and her semi-stifled giggles suggest that, unlike James, she can see the funny side of all this nonsense. When Christian, alarmed by Anna's maidenhood, considers rectifying the situation, she replies, "I'm a situation?" A sharp rejoinder, although if I were her, I'd be much more worried about the rectifying. Even Johnson's valiant performance, however, cannot pierce the gloom or persuade her co-star to lighten up. He brings color to her cheeks, courtesy of mild slaps, but she brings no light to his spirit in return. He spends half the time badgering her about a contract that he's been drawn up in which she, the submissive, must consent to his supremacy. Clauses and subsections are haggled over in such detail that one feels bound to ask, how much of a sex film can this be, given that the people most likely to be turned on by it are lawyers? 50 Shades of Grey is being released just in time for Valentine's Day. That's a bold move, since the film is not just unromantic, but specifically unromantic. Take your Valentine along, by all means, but be warned, it'll be like watching Rosemary's Baby at Christmas. Try holding hands as the hero taunts the rituals of sentiment, such as going out for dinner in a movie. That's not really my thing. What his thing actually is? Lord knows. Although, to judge by the importance that he attaches to grooming, regular feeding, and nicely buffed leather goods, my suspicion is that he doesn't want a girlfriend at all. I know. Mr. Gray's whopping big secret? He wants a pony.